Chapter 19. Corsica, August 1986. That night I went to bed and slept soundly, until I awoke suddenly in the middle of the night, with the sense that something was amiss. And then I became convinced that I was not alone in the room. A bolt of pure fear ran through me, and I thought, though I blush to say it now, of the Genoese noble, hundreds of years dead in his resting place beneath the stones of the house. I sat up in bed. The sensible thing would have been to turn on the light, but like the helpless heroine in a horror film, it never occurred to me to do so. The door was ajar. Had I shut it? I was certain I had. I did so every night before I changed into my pyjamas. No, it had definitely been closed. Now a sliver of moonlit corridor was visible in the aperture between door and frame. Hello? I whispered into the still, dark air, feeling a fool as I did. Then again, hello? Is anyone there? I heard a tiny sound, a crepitation, the claws of a rodent, or the sound of something metallic worried against a surface, the wall or floor. Something gleamed in the moonlight, a few feet off the ground. I was riveted, unable to look away. It was unmistakably an eye, the eye of something crouched beside my bed. I screamed. There was a sound of quick footsteps, and my door banged back on its support. Oliver stood in the frame, haloed from behind by the hallway light. What is it? There was a scream. He peered inside, and then he began to laugh quietly. It was the first time I had heard him do so. Napoleon, as I learned the animal was named, was some kind of lurcher-wolfhound mix. Even in the dim light I could tell that he was one of the ugliest dogs I'd ever seen, with a sparse, pockmarked coat and bandy, overlong legs. He had, as if for comic effect, the most uneven set of lower teeth, all pointing in different directions. His tail was a terrible-looking stump. Sorry for waking you, I told Oliver, feeling foolish. Don't worry, I wasn't properly asleep anyway. He stood at the foot of my bed, where I could just make him out. I asked where the animal had come from. He turned up one day, he told me. Grandpa said he and my grandmother were sitting having lunch on the terrace when the dog appeared at the top of the steps that led up from the road. The poor thing was in such a state that he didn't have the heart to send him away. He rubbed at the spot behind Napoleon's ear, and the animal lolled against his leg in apparent bliss, tail thwacking on the ground where he sat, gazing up at us with beady dark eyes and grinning through his hideous teeth. Why Napoleon? I think it must have been Grandpa's idea of a joke. Poli's the least warlike creature you can imagine. He's lived here for years, but he's still got the mentality of a tramp. He'll wander off and won't be seen for weeks, sometimes months, and then suddenly he'll turn up out of the blue, like he did this evening. Grandpa was worried the first time he disappeared. He set off in Gerard's van, convinced that he'd been hit by a car. When he eventually turned up unharmed, we realised that he'd simply taken off in search of adventure. Though, when my grandmother died, he stayed in the house for a full 3 months. I imagine it went against his every instinct to do so. That's loyalty for you. He can be excellent company. But right now, old boy, I'm sorry to say you aren't wanted.
No, I don't mind. Oliver shook his head.
He may be lovable, but he's probably ridden with fleas. Come on, Poli.
He made his way towards the door. The dog gave an odd whinny of love and clambered creakily to his feet, following a few paces behind as though attached by an invisible lead. I did not sleep well that night, even before I heard Kate scream. My first reaction was to leap from my bed and rush out into the corridor, but I stopped at the sound of voices, followed by laughter. To my astonishment, I recognised it as Oliver's. When he introduced Napoleon, I knew that my old friend had returned. Oliver must have sprinted from his bed to get there before me. Rather pleased at the thought, I crept back to my bed. Though I closed my eyes and hoped for sleep, the thoughts that had been plaguing me returned. If I had dreaded showing Kate the letters, I was looking forward to recounting the next part even less. When I had first invited Kate to stay, I had conveniently managed to forget how painful some details would be to revisit. The temptation of remembering those few blissful months had been too powerful,
briefly eclipsing the bad. I could hardly stop now, though. Having started, I had no option but to tell her the whole. I had heedlessly released the brakes on a juggernaut that I was now powerless to halt. I would give myself a day, I decided. In the meantime, there was something else I had to do. Something just as pressing.